Anyway, look, I do want to welcome now my next guest this evening, Alan Johnson. Alan is, I understand, he is still the co-convener of the Child Poverty Action Group, who put out the best reports. If you want to know what's happening in Aotearoa in terms of child poverty, then you can't go past the reports that this action group put out. But what I want to talk to Alan about this evening is, because he is, I understand, the housing spokesman, and I want to talk to him about housing because, you know, I don't care what anybody says, we have got a housing problem. I mean, I live in Rotorua, for goodness sake, and I could talk to you about that, having spent 11 years on the Rotorua Lakes Council, but it isn't just Rotorua. And how the hell did we get ourselves into this situation? So welcome to the show this evening, Alan. Kia ora, it's Meripeka.
Kia ora, Meripeka. Kia ora.
Thank you. Look, it's lovely to have you on our show this evening. And I do want to say that over the years, the reports that have come out of the Poverty Action Group would knock the socks off, usually, anything that the government report produces. So probably I shouldn't be saying that, should I? But that's been my experience.
I think one of the things that we've got an advantage over is that that no one pays us. You know, when you don't have to worry about who's paying you, you can afford to tell the truth a lot more. And I think quite often government reports are sometimes sanitised because of the political frameworks in which the authors have to work. And I'm certain it's not the case at universities that people can be a little bit more forthright and honest, but even then they're captured a little bit by their funders. Within Child Poverty Action Group, that's not the case. Most of us are doing this for Aroha, just doing this because we think the kaupapa, the take, is an important one that should be witnessed and should be done.
Yes, but you, and of course you are, you come from a policy background, so you are very aware of good policy and that it can make the difference. It can make a hell of a difference in the lives of people, particularly those who are living on Struggle Street.
Oh, it can. If you look at the power of the state versus anything else that's around communities and whānau and hapū and all of them, they don't have the resources of the state. And if you can call, and you'll know this a bit with the same with councils, if you can just bend policy to achieve the best ends, it can achieve a great deal, and because the resources are there to make it happen. And that's really the secret of trying to develop and argue for better policy, because, you know, the state has lots of resources which it could easily turn to challenges such as homelessness and child poverty.
But there seems to be, I've certainly noticed in this election, all of the party leaders have tended to avoid, first of all, anything with the word poverty in it, and looking at the problems and the issues with our children as well in terms of child poverty. So I don't know whether that's because our former Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, was very hot on child poverty. But everybody else, I can't recall any good in-depth debate on how are we going to reduce poverty, preferably eradicate it. Nothing like that seems to have been, has gained any traction.
No, you're right, Matty Pickett. Particularly the two main parties have more or less coalesced, have come together around a narrative, around a corridor that really is about the so-called squeezed middle. And the people at the bottom, and particularly Tamariki, are just left out of that conversation.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, leaving them out. Yeah.
Well, sorry, Alan. You were going to say? Sorry.
No, I was just thinking too, it just looks as though they don't want to see any investment in trying to eradicate the conditions of poverty, which in housing is one, but it's not that. It's our health. It's the health of, and it's the health and adequate, you know, income coming into the homes and all of that sort of thing. So it's all of those sort of things. But it just doesn't seem to, we don't seem to understand, or the governments don't, I don't think, understand that unless you invest in these areas, they will haunt us for many decades to come.
Look, I think that's right. And you know, we're just talking about Richie Poulton, who, as you know, died, passed away a couple of days ago, and the work that he was doing on that Dunedin longitudinal study, you know, where they followed people from their birth right through to the age of 50 plus now. And poverty had a huge impact on whatever happened to those people. You know, the children who grew up in poverty had far far less opportunities and had, and their lives were stunted by the poverty. And yet we know this, and we do nothing about it, and we allow generation after generation to have those same circumstances. And it's, to be honest, it's just indefensible.
Yeah. Well, I suppose, Alan, if you took, and I mean, hope you'll bear with me on this because I've just heard you say something and I wanted to. So I suppose if we look at all of the thousands that we know are children who are currently live in poverty, and you put a dollar sign beside that child in terms of what the cost is going to be, say, in terms of truancy, in terms of lack of labor force participation, in terms of mental and physical health, housing, justice, all of that. Some of those children coming through, actually, there must be about, over their lifetime, must be over $1 million going into some of them.
Look, there are stories like that you know, somebody that struggles in their life and comes, you know, ends up in the criminal justice system and ends up on benefits and all sorts of other things, actually, is a drain on taxpayers or other citizens, and that's true. But I think it's possibly the wrong way of seeing it in total, because I actually think, and I think all your listeners would agree, that every child that's born is born with rights. They have the mana of being a person, and that should be respected at their birth, and they should be given things simply because of that, not because one day they might cost us money, you know? Mm. And I'm not suggesting that's the way you're framing it, but it is a way of looking at it. But I think there's another way of looking at it and saying, how can we tap the potential of this newborn child right, you know, tomorrow, rather than allow him or her and his mother to live in poverty and have diminished opportunities and lives because of that?
Yes. No, well, I think you're right. And when I was saying about, you know, possibly that we are, one person might, over their lifetime, that might cost the taxpayer, actually, then why don't we look at, say, okay, let's take 10% of that and invest that in these first 10 years or 12 years of that child's life, along with every other member of the family, so that we can head off. Well, first of all, so that they will have options and opportunities further down the track, and we can head off some of those, what we know will happen, some of those, they will get on the treadmill, going, you know, on the criminal justice treadmill if we're not careful. They will end up with mental health issues. So, you know, and that's what I would like to see. And it doesn't seem to me to take a scientist to work that damn out, does it?
Look, it's a long-term investment. It requires patience. It requires, you know, a willingness to accept that you're not always going to get it right. And I think in our political culture, we just don't have those things. You know, we don't have that long-term view. We don't have the patience. We live in a society or in a political world that is quick to blame things. And I just think that's regrettable. I think part of the challenge really is to change that culture and to say, look, we actually have to think long-term. We have to think intergenerationally. We actually have to make investments in things that we may never see the benefits of simply because it's the right thing to do, you know?
Yes, yes. Now, one thing I noticed is that you've talked about, because I don't think a lot of people will, look, I just want to share this with you, Alan. In Rotorua, of course, when we had COVID and then we had to get people off the, you know, off the streets and out of the parks and get them into motels. Well, we didn't have to, but that was the option that the government wanted us to take. Certainly, I was never in favour of that. I just thought, oh my God, you've got people living side by side in motels. You've got a mama here with her children, and you've got somebody in here who's a single man. It was just diabolical. The impacts in that. But of course, people didn't seem to understand, I think, that that's transitional housing. So the evaluation that you do, or the assessment rather, for transitional housing, for social housing and emergency housing is quite different. Each category is quite different. And so that your support services and assistance to each of those in the various areas will be different. But we lumped them all in together, Alan. And no wonder we've got problems.
Look, I think we've got problems for a number of reasons in that transitional housing space. One is, of course, the housing, so such as it is, and let's face it, a room in a motel isn't a house. But the house, the accommodation was never designed for the uses it's being put to now. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right, Matty Pick, about the idea that people are living close together in circumstances that are often very risky. And of course, sometimes, you know, people come along and they prey on each other, you know, and not on each other, but on some people, and they, you know, they exploit them. And I just think some of those circumstances are pretty grim. And ideally, we shouldn't be doing it. But what's the next best option? And I think part of the problem I have now, and I expect everyone in Rotorua does, and everyone elsewhere around Aotearoa, think about it too, that this so-called transitional housing has been going on for 3 years, and we just haven't managed to build enough houses to move on for something better and more permanent. And meantime, and you'll know yourself, some of those Rotorua motel units are going for $2,000 a week. But in the time that we've spent just housing people temporarily, we could have built houses for the same cost. I mean, I just think that the government did the right thing initially, but has been very slow to respond subsequently, which I think is something that the next government needs to address more urgently.
And the other thing, although we don't often say it, Alan, but over 80% of the people in their housing, in motel housing in Rotorua, are Māori. So, you know, that tells you that we need to be looking wider than just saying, well, where are we going to put these people now? I mean, there are Māori land blocks that could have been used to put, you know, and transitional housing or other housing that might suit their needs better using their tribal lands. And making sure that the money was available. And as you know, it's not necessarily just the cost of the buildings, it's the bloody infrastructure that can be so expensive.
Yep. Oh, it is indeed. And you know, you being on the council in Rotorua, you'd know this, that you can't turn that infrastructure on overnight. It takes can take years to get it up to a point where it's useful. And I think what happened really in the case of Rotorua is that It lived in the shadow of the Auckland housing market, and you probably know better than I do that many of the housing problems have been caused by people coming from, particularly from Auckland, buying up houses either to live in or to rent out as investments, and it really just swamped the local market. And ultimately, it's a bit like musical chairs, that when the music stops, someone's left without a house, and inevitably, though, they were the people at the bottom, which in the case of Rotorua happened to be, you know, particularly whānau Māori. So there's sort of an inevitability about that process, but I think much of it's been caused by the overheated Auckland property market and the fact that Rotorua is literally just down the road from Auckland, and people looked at that and said, hey, there's some cheap housing down here.
Yeah, there's some cheap housing down there, and we'll get the poor to subsidise my living standard. And that's exactly what happened, actually, Alan.
Yep, I agree.
And so, yes. And also, to be honest, with the motels down here, there are some of them that are doing exceptionally well, living off the misery of the people who don't have homes. And
I think the average cost is around $2,000 a week per unit, which is a huge amount of money. And you know as well as I do that some of those motels in Penton Street would never get $2,000 a week per unit. It's a bonanza for them.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Very, very true. Right, look, so thank you so much, Alan. We're all sort of in countdown mode for next Saturday. You know, I've been talking to a few of my guests this evening, Sir Mark Solomon and Julian Wilcox, and we've been talking about, you know, that what we have perceived as some of the rhetoric coming from political leaders, and I don't want to get you, but I'm just saying, you know, we're disappointed in listening to some of the rhetoric that's come from political leaders, which is not helpful because of the derogatory marks that are being made around Māori whānau and using us as a political football. And I'd like to have thought we were better than that, but somehow we just seem to always revert to that sort of behaviour when you're desperate to get in, I guess.
Look, I think, to be honest, and I've been discouraged by that, I had hoped that we'd become better as a nation. But I just think it's a minority of perspectives. I don't believe particularly younger generations think in those terms. And I'm very hopeful that the generation of my children and hopefully my mokopuna as well will have a vastly more enlightened view on both on the treaty and on you know, the nature of inequality and poverty in Aotearoa. And I'm certain that's the case. And I think what we're seeing is a generational thing. and the politicians are going for the baby boomers and just their old entrenched attitudes, to be honest.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Oh, look, well, look, thank you so much, Alan, for talking with us this evening on Radio Aotea. Lovely to have you and giving us your thoughts too, obviously around the housing, and we certainly have to do better because our families deserve better, Alan.
Yeah, kia ora, Matty Pickett, and thank you for having me on this show.